Hello everyone, it's another Room with a Review podcast. I'm actually ahead of schedule this week for a change, which is nice. And this week I'm doing Boy Swallows Universe, a book that I finished reading yesterday, and a book that I started a couple months ago but kind of had to restart because I read the first chapter or two and then didn't read it for about a month. It's quite a good book, all in all. So I'm very, very happy with this book. It was a gift that was given to me last year for Christmas and looked interesting. I saw it in a lot of bookstores. It was a high seller, so I started reading it. And then it dropped off. I just didn't keep going with it, and then there was a bit of a gap. I thought, all right, let's restart it. And I'm glad I did, because there was parts in the first couple of chapters that I probably would have forgotten or were very important for later on in the book. And then I basically read it all in the last couple of days. I could have read it, you know, in a day. It wasn't a difficult read, but it was definitely one of those books that's a page turner. It had some cliffhanger chapters that kind of made me keep reading it. And it's been a while since I've read a book that really done that, or I felt the need to keep going with it. So I really liked that sense of it. Like, it definitely engaged me really a lot. So this book, Boy Swallows Universe, it's about two brothers who have dealt with some family trauma. Their mum and stepdad are drug dealers, and it then just goes through a series of unfortunate events, but I guess that is one way of putting it. It goes through kind of worsening situations that these two brothers go through, their relationship, and how they survive and deal with the world around them. So I don't want to give away too much because this is a fairly recent book. I don't want to ruin it for anyone that's looking to read it. And I strongly recommend reading this book. I think it's wonderful. But I think it's a really good job of the way it's written. And I think that's what is the absolute best part of this book, is that it's written in such a unique and compelling and original way that that's where a lot of the magic of it comes from. It does have aspects of magical realism, because at points it asks you to kind of suspend belief, but it's not magical realism in the sense that we've really got magic actually happening. I think the plot itself was quite good. The characters, the contrast between them was really strong, but I do have a couple of issues with it, which I'll talk about them now, and I'll come back to the really good parts of it. So our central character, Eli Bell, he starts off the book and he's quite young. And for me, this is one little thing, because it's a little bit like I had a similar problem with Wanda. If you've read Wanda, the main character, August, in that is meant to be only, I think, 11, 12 years old, around that age. And yet a lot of the language being used doesn't really match that kind of age, and no one wants to read a book that's meant to be about these serious issues and these complex things actually written with the language of a 12-year-old. But it does negate some of the characterization a little bit. And in Boy Swallows Universe, it was Eli again, starts the book, he's about 12, and he's 12, 13 for a large portion of the book. And he's treated in some ways like a really young kid, but at the same time, he's not. And I found that a little bit, I don't know, it was hard for me to gauge whether or not it was accurate depiction of a 12, 13-year-old kind of teenager or not. And then as the book goes on, he gets older and I think he's about 18 by the time it finishes. So, yeah, in terms of characterization, he was really good. We definitely got a clear sense of who he was and how he felt about his family and other people. His brother, August, who doesn't speak much, I felt that he was in some ways underdeveloped. I don't think that he had some very defining features which carried him through, but I didn't actually get a good sense of who he was as a person, which was a little bit disappointing. By the time you get towards the end of the book, and a lot of it has spent on Eli and August's relationship, or Gus as he's called, not having more development of Gus was frustrating. So I guess that was one thing to think about. Some other characters I thought were really good. Slim, who was a man who had been in prison and was now kind of a mentor for Eli. He was really, really, really good. I thought he was a really great character. I thought some of the other characters, so that the parents of these brothers, as well as the stepdad, Lyle, they were all quite good. I think there was another guy called Titus Bros, who was a little bit almost cliched and like, oh, it was almost as though the author, Trent Dalton, who had just watched like some classic movies with gangsters and drug dealers and how they were kingpins and just kept that, like there was nothing, there wasn't anything too original about him as a character. But I do think it was still told well. Likewise with his enforcer, Iwan Kroll, same sort of thing. Bishdang, same sort of thing. It was very almost cliched and unoriginal, some of these characters, and that was a little bit disappointing, but the way they were written was quite good. So that's the broad outline of most of the characters. What I have hinted to a few times now is the way it's written. And I think this was really important. The plot was, it moved quite a bit, but it was good because it went through some strong phases. So we had the first kind of stage where we had the brothers, they were growing up, they were living with their mom and stepdad, and they were finding their place in the world, and they realized their drug dealers that were going on around them. So I started to get involved in that. Then it jumps, not jumps forward, but shortly after there's a key scene where a conflict happens. And again, I'm really trying to limit the spoilers because if I say too much early on, then it will kind of ruin the entire thing. But the second stage was definitely a key conflict that set up the second half of the book. And that key conflict, again, was quite well done. And the third part was obviously the resolution. So it was a typical kind of three-act structure with some plots and subplots. And I thought all of these things, absolutely the best feature of this whole book was how interwoven all of it was. So when I was saying before about Titus Bros, he was unoriginal in many ways, but the way he was written was really good. He is described as being a bag of bones. He's described as wearing all white and very portraying this image of being pure. And that's a really, really good description we get. Some of the imagery we get for him is really, really strong. Metaphors are good. Symbols are good. But then as we go through different parts, he, after he disappears for part of the book and resurfaces, he's described as a ghost. But then that ghost becomes another kind of symbol representing something else, and it's probably not what you think it is as well. And I think there's lots of symbols like that or integrated different parts of it. So I thought it was a really, really well, as I said already, well written book in terms of integrating these ideas and overlapping them and just building that perfectly interwoven language. You also had some really, really good, it was kind of a style. So when we talk about style with students, this is one thing that's really hard to explain to them, but this is a good example of it. You could pretty much turn to any page and find an example of this, I would argue. It felt like that anyway, but it wasn't over the top as part of the characterization. And you had a lot of these juxtapositions or tricolons or asyndetons. There's just listing of different features of one thing. So you might get three short phrases. You'd have this repetition of the first word each phrase, but it would be three different finishes each time. And that was all the way through the book. And I thought it was actually really, really good because each time it was done, it changed the way you saw what was being described slightly. So I wish I'd take an example of it, and I don't have the book in front of me to look at it. If we think, for instance, where's a good example of it? We'll take again this character of Titus Bros. You might be, for instance, white suit, white bones, white hair. There's one example of that, but then at other times it goes more than that. It's, this was, I was about to pick something that would have been a spoiler. This was August, who doesn't speak much, but writes words in the air that his brother interprets, and it's, their non-verbal communication is quite strong. It might be something like, August's hand wiggled through the air. His hand waved magic. His hand brought things into existence. And so each time it adds something extra or just tweaks slightly what we think is going on or how we think about it, which I think is what makes it so good, because it becomes three-dimensional in many ways. It's definitely multifaceted. And all the way through that's being done, we're constantly reevaluating and questioning, well, not questioning, but at least changing the way we think about these things. And we're given new information to just alter what we think. So I thought all that stuff was really good. And so when I talk about style, I think that is one of the hardest things for students to grasp. But this is a really good example of it. And it's very clear. It's very easy to point out. So I think it's a good text where if you found an extract, you could definitely use it with students. But obviously, content-wise, you'd have to pick, because some of it's quite violent. You've got some definitely inappropriate or mature themes. So depending on your age group, you might want to reconsider. I think it would, at the youngest you would probably do it with, would be year 9 or 10, and even into year 11. And even year 9, I probably would be mindful of what I was providing. I think year 10 as well, depending on the section or extract you provided, you have to know your students quite well and make sure they're able to engage in it at an appropriate level and that they wouldn't be immature about it. Some would, some wouldn't, some would go, oh, ha, ha, and they'd make jokes about it, I would guess. But I think it's one that you need to try to limit that as much as possible. Then year 11 and 12, at any point, if you were going to use it, as I said, style, it'd be great for either reading to write or craft of writing, at least as a sample text for those things. I think some extension students you could definitely do it with. Just depends on where you would fit it in. But as a writing prompt, I think you could definitely use it there. But more than that, as I said, characterization is quite strong, but the narrative itself is just really, really well woven. And we get these kind of side narratives happening at times, whether it's flashbacks into character backgrounds or historical events or the history of the setting. I think all of that's really, really good too. So I think there are many, many parts to this that could be used for different purposes. I think also on top of that, the themes it deals with are quite pertinent, and even though it's set in around, must be the 1980s, that was one thing that was hard to put my finger on exactly when it was set, because a lot of the references I thought were coming from the 70s, but then a lot of the things, for instance, like the pop culture references to musical acts and songs were more 80s. So be it. I'm assuming Trent Dalton did his homework and all these things and made sure they were accurate. But it was still really good. But the themes, as I was saying, they're quite strong. I think you've got hope and loyalty and honour. There's an undercurrent of ethics and morals amongst it all. I think there are a lot of things to draw out from it if you were into it. As I got towards the end, it reminded me in many ways of Jasper Jones, where in Jasper Jones there's a central crime going on, and it's obviously intertextual with To Kill a Mockingbird, whereas this one, it didn't have that going for it necessarily, but there was definitely some similar features to Jasper Jones. And I think if you had students that read through Jasper Jones and handled it really well, this would be a good logical next step for them to read. It's a good recommendation. And if you like Jasper Jones, then I definitely think you'll like this, because I had issues with Jasper Jones at points, but I didn't have any issues as strongly as I did with Jasper Jones. And I've mentioned those ones that they were. That was just the lack of characterization for some of them. So I think, I think there's lots and lots you could draw out from it. I would be highly recommending it. I think a lot of people would read it. It's not, as I said, a difficult read. I smashed it out pretty much I read majority of it in maybe 4 to 5 hours. I probably read about half the book, a bit more. So, yeah, it's not one that will take most people long to read if you get going with it. But I do think it's definitely worthwhile. I'm not sure if I finished. I can't remember now. But if I started mentioning the other... Yeah, I did kind of. The side stories that go on, I think those are also a really good thing. You could find some extracts from there. So you've got some, for instance, newspaper type article stories within it. You've got some letters. You've got, as I said, some flashbacks and recollections. And you could easily pick some of those to use as your extracts if you wanted to. But in terms of all of those things, it's definitely a good example for many, many of the concepts that you might use when you teach it. Or you could use part of it still, depending on what you're teaching, as well, to cover some things. So style would be the main one, but I do think setting narrative / narration would be another really, really good one to focus on. So I'll leave it there for Boy Swallows Universe. Actually, no, I'll talk one more thing about the title. It took me a while to figure out what the title was talking about, which is kind of good because it was important for later in the book, and it doesn't truly get explained, but it does present to you all the way through what you need for it. More than that, though, there was a part later on, and it was just this really great moment because you saw how much planning and thought had gone into this book, where our central character, Eli Bell, he talks to another character, a reporter and a newspaper editor, and basically he gets told that you have to be able to summarize this story in 3 words, and he's not able to do it. But then he talks to this reporter, and she is able to do it for him, and then he comes up with things later on. But this idea of being able to tell things in 3 words, it's something that was actually embedded from the very beginning. We had each title is 3 words long. Obviously, of each chapter, I mean, the title of the book is 3 words. There are, and as I said, we've got this tricolon and repetition and anaphora all the way throughout, that it just comes back to this idea of minimalism at times, but it's also emphasizing the details when they're necessary. And I think it finds that balance really, really well. So yeah, by all means read it, and I think you'll see what I mean about all these things. It was hard for me to not give away too many spoilers, but talk about all these things. But I do think that, yeah, if as I said, Jasper Jones is a good kind of comparison I would make for it. But I and Wonder to an extent, as I said, some aspects of that. Definitely worth the read. If you don't get into it, it's not that long to get through. It's fairly quick. It definitely made me want to keep going with it as fast as I could. But I will leave it there for now for that text, and then be back in just a moment with Ad of the Week. Ad of the week this week is a Cadbury ad, funnily enough, as we are heading into Easter very soon. I don't know how I feel about ads at the moment, given everything that's going on and people's lack of access to certain things or the fact that they can't leave their house. I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, we definitely need to keep the economy going, and advertising's a part of that. But also, we need to be mindful and have our humanity about us and keep that in mind as we, you know, asking people to do certain things. So the Cadbury ad I'm not so bad about, because it's still food. It's not necessarily food you'd be eating, but it's something that people can at least access by going to the supermarket. Some other ads I saw, which I might use for next week, I just don't know about whether or not they're suitable right now. But like, I mean, TV companies should be considering that, and I guess they're trying to make their money. That's what I mean. It's hard to find that tightrope. But this Cadbury ad. A boy wakes up and it's Easter. He looks outside and there's eggs throughout the yard, and then he sees in the tree a big egg. And he goes out and he goes to collect it. But we see in the backyard other chocolate eggs, like an egg hunt style. And at that point I was like, well, why doesn't he just grab those other eggs? I mean, quantity over quality. It might be one big one, but it's still a hollow egg, and you've got all these other eggs around you. Go get them, you'll have heaps more. Plus a big egg, you're not going to eat that in one sitting. You're going to take part of it, eat it. It'll take a couple of days at least to get through. It should take a couple of days to get through. I'm not a big chocolate fan, but anyway, So he goes out and he climbs this tree and he pulls this large egg out of the tree, leaves all the other ones in the backyard, by the way, which maybe says a lot more about me, but I would be going for those other eggs. It's absolutely quantity over quality in an egg hunt. However, anyway, there's not any, no one else looking for eggs with him. It's just him on his own. And then we cut to a young girl waking up and the covers are pulled back and we see the giant egg there waiting for her. And I really should have paid more attention. We'll rewatch this ad, but she had a broken leg, so she could not have got us. This brother's gone out, gotten a giant egg for his sister. I thought it was a really nice ad. And it obviously caught my attention because I've probably at some point come across other Easter ads in the last few days or weeks. Just they haven't sunk in. But this was one that I thought was really, really nice. It's a very nice message. It's very on brand for Cadbury. I think it matches the purpose of Easter really well. We see a lot of these types of ads at Christmas, but I think this was a great one. The idea of an egg hunt, perfect. So in terms of ads, really, really, really good. Really good message. Really, very clear. But it, again, ties back into what I keep talking about with a lot of these ads is that secondary message that's going out about what is a company saying about its brand? How is it gaining trust from its consumers? Oh, look at us. We're very family orientated. If you buy Cadbury, it means you're caring. And those subtleties to it. And I think that's what's really good to do with students. As I said, almost every week, I reckon, that we teach so many ads with students, or at least I know I do, just they're really quick to throw in to demonstrate some things sometimes. And I think it's a really good art form too, but, or textual form. But these main message of what the product is they're selling versus the secondary message of who are we as a company, I think is really, really good. And I think in this case, they've done a perfect job of that. So out of the week this week is Cadbury Easter. I if you wanted to find it, I guess I would just look up Boy Egg Hunt Cadbury Sister. That would probably get you the ad you want. But otherwise, it's been playing on TV, I think, a little bit. So keep an eye out for it. But that's definitely the ad that I thought was quite good. Where you would use it, it's entirely up to you. But I do think it fits just in the broad spectrum of companies trying to show something about who they are, not just their product. And that's it for Ad of the Week for this week. I will be back in a moment with War and Peace. And finally, War and Peace for this week. I only thought about it when I finished that Ad of the Week section. That if I say I'll be back with War and Peace, it sounds like I'm bringing war and bringing peace. Not doing either. Well, I'm hopefully bringing peace. But the book, I'm on track, which is good. I'm aiming to read a little bit ahead over the next couple of days now that I finished Boys Wars Universe. And again, it's slowed down a little bit. I thought it was really good the last few weeks where we were getting into issues of equality and freeing serfs from estates and getting them to have more of an equal role in the world. And I thought that was really nice. We're going down a good path there. And now we're back to the character Pierre trying to reconcile with his wife, his role within the Freemasons. And then a couple of other moments, we've got another character that's emerged who is proposing and sorting out his dowry. So it just kind of two steps forward, one step back a little bit in the last few chapters, but we're kind of losing a central complication. I don't know if there's meant to be one, but it's not, there isn't one that's kind of sticking out above all else. And I think that's interesting for the book because we deal with all these different issues as we go. And I'm interested to see where it goes as I kind of enter the second half of the book, or the second two thirds, really. So that's it from War and Peace. I don't really have much to say about it because it's definitely slowed down and it's interesting. I'll be interested to see what I say when I get to the end of it, because if I'm finding this now that it's slowing down and I'm not gripped by it, is it the sort of book that I would say, yes, everyone should read it. It's so brilliant. It's got lots of really good ideas, which I do think it has done that a lot, but they're so spread out at this point, it feels. There are parts I remember from along the way, but it's not as though all the way through it's been constantly gripping. It's been super engaging. I think it's had moments that have been really, really insightful and wonderful, but then it's sometimes goes through phases where it just drops down a little bit. So I'll be interested to see how it goes as I get further into it, what other kind of central issues emerge from it. But that's what I will say about War and Peace for the moment. Just, I'm not getting sick of it. I'm still enjoying it, but I'm definitely much more reflective and starting to have it more at arm's length than I am holding it close to my chest. But I'll leave it at that for now. I'll see how I go as I go through the rest of the year. It may change what big book I aim to read next year, while I read other things too. Thanks everyone. As always, stay safe. If you want to get in touch or ask questions, at EduDaveTion on Twitter is the easiest way to do that. It's EduDaveTion. Especially if you have questions about Boy Who Swallows Universe, given that I've just read it. I mean, a lot of those questions you can probably Google, but it may be you want more information about it. It may be that you just want to talk about it now that you've read it. And I'm happy to talk about that because I had to limit what I said about it. It may be you want to have suggestions for War and Peace. Maybe I've missed stuff and you're absolutely screaming at me. Likewise, if you have a suggestion, that would be great. Let me know. Any of those things, please, by all means, more than open to listen to them. Have a good week.